When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Today, my guests are Pete and Edie Freudenberger. Pete and Edie founded the Blue Star Academy, which helps serve some of the unique educational needs of military-connected students. And one of the reasons I wanted to have them on the show is because we oftentimes talk about the needs of veterans and service members, but we haven't talked much about their kids on this show. And as part of the family, they have a significant impact on the veteran or service member who we typically talk about on this podcast. And if those children's needs aren't being met, then it's likely that there's an added stress on the rest of the family, including the veteran and the service member and potentially their spouse as well. So with that, welcome to the show, Pete and Edie. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves and your backgrounds?
Hi, so Pete Freudenberger, really glad to be here. I am an Army veteran, a licensed clinical social worker, really have dedicated my life to working with the military community. And one of the things that I'm really excited about getting into today is talking about the family, because as you said, that's certainly an underserved portion of the population in the military.
Right. And I'm his wife, Edie. My affiliation with the military is through my husband. I'm not affiliated, but he's clearly a veteran. So I've experienced motherhood, you know, with children of a veteran, and I'm a spouse of a veteran. So I have my own interactions with the VA, with the veteran community. Pete's so active in the community that we attend parades, we go to events, we try and keep our kids up to date on what's going on. So that's kind of my, you know, my affiliation. My profession is an educator. So Pete's the social worker and I'm the educator. I have my doctorate in education and I have focused on military connected children or students.
Yeah, that's great. And so this joint forces that you have, you know, with your, both of your backgrounds really makes it, you know, make logical sense that you guys would come together and put your efforts, combine your efforts together to help out these military children. And honestly, when you first reached out to me about being on the show, I didn't really know that there was anything unique about the educational needs of military-connected students. And I'm sure that might be true of some of the listeners as well, which is, again, why I wanted to have you on the show to raise awareness for these issues. My son was only about a year and a half old when I got out of the Army, so I never really had to consider his educational needs with regards to my military affiliation while I was in. So what are some of the things that your organization, the Blue Star Academy, does to bridge the gap for these students?
So just to give a little bit of background, like you said, you didn't know, a lot of people don't know, they're about 2 million military connected children in the US. About 80% of them are in the public school system. And that's not necessarily including kids who are related to veterans or, you know, veteran connected. We're not sure that they're counted as well as military connected, meaning active, or at least close to active duty. So maybe, you know, recently deployed or just were, you know, just serving. And it also is not clear if that includes the numbers of National Guard or Reserve connected children. So again, I'm giving you numbers, but you know, it's only what we count. Mm-hmm. The children that are being counted, some of the issues that they face are transition. So, you know, military connected children move many more times than a traditional student. It can be up right. to, I mean, I've interviewed children who've moved up to 12 times in their K through 12 career. So that's pretty dramatic. And all the things that come with that, you can imagine, you know, they can't keep with the same friends. They can't necessarily have the same relationships with their teachers. They have to relearn the culture of the school. They're just logistically, their courses may not be counted the same. So they may not be able to graduate the way that students should graduate. They, you know, cannot necessarily maintain the extracurriculars. So when they go to apply to college, their transcript and their resume may look a little funky. And then how do they explain that? And they may not get into the schools they want to get into because of it, and may affect their grade point average. So these are all identified needs and issues that children face. What I did was start researching the children that were not being identified, that were somewhat invisible, so maybe veteran connected, maybe related to, you know, someone in the reserves or National Guard. And we don't actually know all of the issues that they face. You know, talking to them, I think they have some identity issues. Where do I belong? I'm not really this kid, you know, who's who's got a dad who's deployed. But I'm really, I am affiliated. And I'll just give you an example. When we register our children at our local public school, there are some questions that are mandated by law in terms of military connection so that they can identify us as a military family. Well, I don't fit under any of those questions. When I answer for my children, it's, do you have a spouse that's actively serving? Are you actively serving? And when I can't answer those questions in the, you know, affirmative, then I have to actually check a box that says I have no military affiliation and my children have none. So it's really difficult for me to check that box and say, I have no affiliation whatsoever, forget about me, and know that my kids go to school that way. So, you know, it spans the gamut in terms of issues that they face.
And one biggie that I wanted to piggyback on that with is the negative impacts on mental health. And that's my specialty. So there are a lot of negative impacts, as you can imagine, with some of the challenges that Edie was talking about, how those loss of friends continuously losing your teacher, continuously having to relearn school culture, like all those things come with a cost to mental health. Mm-hmm. And if there are not supports around that as well, then you not only have the child experiencing those issues, but then not having the mental health capacity to do it in a healthy way.
Right. And growing up, I moved a few times as a kid, and it not in a military context, just, you know, regular, we moved from one town to another. And, you know, so I had a new school, new teachers, new friends that I had to make and everything. And being the new kid sucks. Let's just face it. It's not a fun experience. And like the kid that you were talking about who moved 12 times in their K through 12 career, if you want to call it that, they were the new kid, 12 times. And that is not a comfortable situation. But also with the National Guard and reserves, where the school that the child goes to may be so far away from an active duty base where the teachers would be maybe more aware and more sensitive to the fact that a parent might be deployed or be away for long stretches of time at a school or whatever the case may be. Some of these teachers, and to no fault of their own, they really don't know a whole lot about the military culture and what is expected of these children. And so bringing up these issues to the teachers and things so that they can be aware and a little bit more sensitive to these kids is probably a huge help, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said that, because one of our main focus, especially during COVID, because it's so hard to interact with schools right now, administrators are overwhelmed, students are overwhelmed, parents are overwhelmed. It's been hard to do direct service by choice, you know, because we don't want to add to that overwhelming feeling. But one of the things that we have been focusing on is developing professional development curricula for educators so that they can understand more about military connected or veteran connected children, especially veteran connected or National Guard reserves, because that's just not highlighted the same way. It's a national conversation, I think. It's coming from many organizations right now that we need to educate educators, but our focus is really on those school districts, like you said, that aren't near a base and they don't already have that information. And we may not even know that they don't know, you know, they don't.
Right.
So, I mean, I would say that, you know, to your audience, if your children are in a district and you're experiencing some of that, where there's some disconnect between what your teachers in the district overall understand, that's the kind of thing that potentially we can come and help with, and certainly reach out to us on that. But that's something that we're trying to focus on very heavily right now, is to build that training.
Yeah, that's great. So what does some of that training look like for some of these educators? And well, potentially even yeah. for the families and the students themselves, if that's something that you cover as well.
Right. It's interesting because as I was building the training or as I build different curricula, I have to take a step back and say, okay, what's the national conversation about the military? You know, what is the civilian approach to the military, and how can we bridge that gap to have a better relationship and a better mm-hmm. understanding so they can better educate? So how deep do you go? How much do you explain? I mean, I would think that, you know, that providers of any type of education are not necessarily well-versed on the structure of the military, on what it means to be active versus veteran versus National Guard versus reserve. I mean, a lot of people hear about the National Guard right now helping with vaccines and this and that. I don't think people really understand what it means and what it means to serve on a weekend every mm-hmm. month, or, you know, to be called suddenly for the reserves. So all of those pieces have to be included that are not really about educating the children, but giving that background and then moving into how can you help identify these children that maybe are like mine who have to check the box to say not affiliated, right? And then you also can't have the preconceived notions about those children that they are all the same. So it is a challenge to try and provide information to educators, but just giving them a basic understanding and making them aware of a population of students that are coming in and out of their classrooms, and giving them the tools to be able to maybe identify those children. I'll give you an example. I interviewed a 9-year-old girl whose father was in the National Guard and he was deployed. And she would come to school every day with a teddy bear that her dad had given her. She dressed this teddy bear in army fatigue, you know.
Uniform.
Yeah, uniform. So he was sort of symbolic of her dad. But she left him in the car every day and told, you know, her mother, take him with you to work, you know, because she knew she couldn't bring it into school. So this child is walking up to the school door, leaving her father and the thoughts on that behind, and then walking into school. So how can the teachers identify that and support her better? And that just wasn't something the mother was sort of like, oh yeah, I never really thought about that. They just aren't doing, they've never asked me about it. They're not doing anything. It puts the onus on the parent. Right. But it's a tough situation and it's hard to educate enough, you know, but just providing tools, hopefully, and some awareness can help.
Yeah. I think the awareness is enough, because I don't think there's any teachers out there who are intentionally, you know, ignoring the needs of their students. They, if they're not aware of any special needs that are available with the student, be it service, military connected, or what have you, they're just not going to be able to, offer that support until, you know, maybe 6 months down the road, they eventually figure something out, because, okay, why is this kid acting differently from all the others? And, they eventually unravel everything to figure out what's actually going on. And at that point, the school year is almost over and it's almost too late at that point. Mm-hmm. So getting in from the beginning, maybe improving those questionnaires so that you can talk about veteran status, National Guard reserve status, that type of thing on those questionnaires, so that families like yours don't necessarily have to check off no military affiliation, because that's not true, you know.
And it's not helpful. No. So one of the other things that I also wanted to say is, Edie talked a little bit about the staff, the actual teachers. One of the things that we also want to be doing is talking to school counselors. School counselors are oftentimes the glue that kind of holds issues like this together. If there's a behavior issue or a kid needs extended time for testing or certain types of things like that, because maybe the mental health impact of mom or dad's service is really impacting them. So having that counselor on board too, so that it's a shared burden. It's not everything's not on that teacher, because we already know teachers are saints and are very, very overtaxed already. So we want to be cognizant of that as well.
Right. Yeah. And that, you bring up a good point. You know, when some school districts have, you know, overcrowded classrooms and they're dealing with, you know, 30 or more different students with all unique different individual needs, they may not necessarily catch on to this type of stuff. And, so being aware of the fact that there is a student with, maybe a parent deployed or something like that. There's obvious mental health issues that come along with that. And there's going to be, they're going to be distracted. They're not going to be focused on taking that test or whatever. And so maybe they do need a little more time or a little extra support in that area. So you're absolutely right there. Now let's talk about some of the resources that are available for military connected students. I know, Pete, you had talked about some of the mental health resources that are available, different organizations that can help out with the military connected students. What are some of those, and maybe some of the other educational type resources that are out there?
Yeah. So when you talk about mental health, I've actually worked for Cohen Veterans Network, who operates nationally, and then they have clinics all over the country. Basically, the goal is to have 25 of them across the country, and that they may expand that over time. But the brilliance behind Cohen Veterans Network is that it's evidence-based, super high quality mental health care that's at no or low cost to anybody in the family. So it could be a caregiver. It doesn't have to be a blood relative. You could have served one day. You could have bad paper, bad conduct discharge. So they're a fabulous resource for people all over the country. There are a lot of other organizations that support families through, like Operation Homefront does a lot of stuff around supplies and kind of easing the burden on parents in terms of some of the cost stuff and some of the logistics that really are kind of, as parents, we have 5 kids. So we've been through the get the school supplies for multiple right. kids, and you get all these lists. And so I think they help with that's not all that they do, but that is one of the things that I know the most about Operation Homefront that we've actually interacted with them on. There are also a lot of organizations that the primary entry point is kind of the veteran in terms of mental health, and that kids can also kind of be a part of that over time. But in terms of like who's available out there for students right now, MCEC,
which is the Military Child Education Coalition. They're really trying to branch out beyond just active duty to the veteran space as well. They promote, they have an initiative that they've been promoting, this Purple App or Purple Star, I think it's called. But there's an initiative that is bringing states on board to change that identification method, and maybe to add more. I know Texas added, are you veteran connected? Do you have a parent who was injured in the military? Right. So they have more identifiers, and they're kind of promoting that. Blue Star Families is an organization that does a lot of surveys and a lot of research in the community to try and identify pain points And they do a lot for children during the summer. Now with COVID, they were just telling us about some virtual camps that they're doing this summer. And they usually do Blue Star Museums where military families can get into museums at low cost or for free. But we've also been partnering, and we were just doing a collaboration with some other VSOs. And one of them was, is it called Camp Coral?
Camp Coral, yeah. And they basically offer summer camps for military kids.
Right, I think they're in North Carolina. And they were working with an organization that supports veterans with service-connected disabilities or severe disabilities. So they're all kind of interconnected and supporting in terms of education. Like I said, that, you know, there's legislation that is really trying to promote more identification in the schools. And hopefully that will make a difference. There's a new initiative that is actually an old initiative that existed quite a few years ago and kind of is coming back right now, called Joining Forces. They're supporting military families. And one of their initiatives that they've announced is to support the educational needs of military connected children. So that's a public-private partnership that hopefully will start to trickle down a little bit more. One of the things they do is help at the college level to teach pre-service teachers more about what we were just talking about, you know, how to understand the population better.
Right. So, I mean, that's those are a lot of resources. I'm sure that's just scratching the surface. There's you know, a lot of organizations out there who are, you know, doing similar things to you, you know, raising awareness and, you know, helping the teachers and the families and the students out with their unique needs in the schools. So when we identify some of these students, you know, let's just say it's a, you know, National Guard situation where they're going to a public school, they're far away from any active duty base. You know, and I'm sure it's not going to be a one-off because there's plenty of soldiers or, you know, airmen who, or, you know, whatever the case may be, who are located in that area. But they may be spread out over many different towns and, you know, in a much wider geographic area. So it, you know, it's not going to be a one-off case necessarily, but they're going to have much fewer in each school. You know, when I guess hard way to phrase this, like, there has to be a balance somewhat too, to be able to help out these kids without necessarily rewriting the book on how to educate kids either.
Sure.
You know, so is there some kind of fine balance that you guys have found that has been able to help out with these situations? Or
so, I mean, as a corollary for me, I'm glad you brought this up because I was thinking about this as we were talking earlier. As someone who's worked in a school before, and I think about like first aid, CPR first aid, a lot of the staff has to have CPR first aid training, correct? So you know how to give breaths, you know how to give compressions, but you don't have to do that every day. You just have to have that in the back of your mind. You have to recertify and you have to have that base knowledge to be able to say, oh my gosh, someone's in crisis. Then your skills kick in and you can help. So that's kind of, I mean, to me, that's how I see our role in terms of educating the educator is to not necessarily say, okay, well, you got to do X, Y, and Z because this student is military affiliated. I think it's much more about education, understanding, and having the knowledge or at least knowing who to talk to. So maybe even just making sure that the school counselors in an isolated school district like this has a direct line to the veteran service officer for that county, because every county in the nation, I believe, has a veteran service officer. And that person is usually a purveyor or a connector to get people to where they need to be. So it doesn't, I mean, we're not trying to train full on military children certified case man. Yeah. Yeah. Right. We're certainly not doing boot camp, but yeah, that's it's really more of just giving a base. I mean, and as we develop our curriculum and training, we will certainly have more advanced topic. So if people want to know about suicide in the military community, or they want to know about deployments and what they look like and how long they are and mm-hmm. where can people go and what does the guard do and why is the guard different than how is it different? Like little things like that. So when a kid comes up and says, oh yeah, my dad's in the guard, they know, okay, guard is not active duty and this is how it's different.
Right. Okay.
So that's important to me. Yeah. That's for your audience too. I think that really gives a good illustration of kind of what we're trying to attempt to do for these teachers we definitely don't want to overburden them. I know they mm-hmm. have so many responsibilities right now. We just want to give them a little bit of base knowledge so that they can, when there's along with the system to identify them, so that once a teacher says, oh, Johnny comes in, I know he's military affiliated. You don't have to say, oh, everybody who's military affiliated, raise your hand. Like those.
Right.
We don't want it to be like that. We want it to be, the teacher knows Johnny is military affiliated, and then maybe connect the family and the family can talk with the teacher if there's a deployment, just to have a little bit of knowledge and understanding, similar to kind of like you would do with I don't want to correlate kids in the military with kids with disabilities, but it's a very unique need that needs to be met. Not all the time. You don't have to. Yeah. So I think that's, right. I think that's really a good illustration of that.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And it's like you're saying, it's not a wholesale rewrite of how they do things. It's just a little bit of knowledge that they can keep in their back pocket. And when the situation comes up that there's a military connected student, they can dip into that knowledge. They can use the resources that they know are available. And as new resources become available, obviously, you know, that will be something that they can learn about as well. But at least they know that there is something unique, you know, and special about some of these children who might need a little extra help in their education. So, I think that that's great.
Yeah. And I'm very involved in the space. And a lot of times it surprises me how little people that are very connected to the community know about these resources.
Right. Yeah. Like I said, I've been a soldier. I was, in the military community. I still, on a regular basis, talk to veterans, through this podcast and other, things that I do. And when you guys reached out, this was news to me that there were, any unique special, considerations for military children and, military connected children. And, so I feel like this is a great way to bring up those issues to the schools, to the educators, the counselors, the parents, and the students themselves, so that they know how to deal with these situations. Is there anything else that maybe we didn't touch on that you wanted to talk about and cover before we wrap up?
Two things quickly, I think. So one, I wanted to, as we're talking about resources, I think it's really important that I put a plug in for the National Resource Directory that the VA maintains. We're listed in the National Resource Directory. And if there's a family out there looking for resources that we might not be best suited to help with, that is an absolute robust listing of agencies and organizations that you can search by your need. So a National Resource Directory is something that I would encourage people to look up. Okay. And then just how to reach us. If you guys want to reach out, the best email to reach us at would be info@bluestaracademy.org. All one word. And we're also on social media as well, if people want to try to kind of follow some of the stuff that we're doing. So.
Yeah, and I will have links to all of the resources that you two mentioned throughout the episode, as well as your website and social media links, email, all that stuff. I'll put in the show notes so people who listen to this episode down the line will be able to know where to go to find some of these resources, because Google isn't always their friend. They may not be able to necessarily find them quite as easily as they might like to. So I'll have links to all of that in the show notes. And I mean, it has been an absolute pleasure to speak with you today and to learn more about the needs of the military-connected children who are in schools and need that little bit of extra assistance and guidance with their education path. So thank you very much to both of you for taking the time to talk to me and the audience about the unique special needs that come with military connected children.
Thanks for sharing. We appreciate it.
It was an absolute pleasure. Mm-hmm. And thanks again so much for the work that you do, Scott.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.